A podcast of the cinema.
My name's Dave White. I'm a film critic.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm a film critic.
I was going to say we're with the wrap. Technically, I guess we still are.
Yeah, we're on a break.
But it's a sabbatical.
We've agreed to see other people.
And by other people, we mean only each other.
Yeah, for the time being, yes. I'm also the co-host of the Breakfast All Day and Who Shot You podcast, yeah. And the upcoming A Film and a Movie podcast coming soon from Bramble Jam.
Oh, you can announce that now?
Yeah, they've already leaked the pilot out to Deck the Hallmark Patreon members, and we'll be kicking off very soon in June. So
exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Joblessness is really working out.
Opportunities around every corner.
Nothing dangerous. little
surprises around every corner.
Furthermore, we're married.
We are.
To each other.
Yep.
And that's the introduction to us.
It's really all you need to know.
I heroically drove across town this morning.
Well done.
Thank you for your
service.
I need your praise for that. I got in the car and drove further than I have driven since the month of February.
Wow. How was traffic?
Non-existent. I mean, It's Memorial Day.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So not only were people who might have otherwise been driving to work not there, but, you know, things the way they are
in these times.
There's much less traffic going on in Los Angeles. I was delivering a chicken tetrazzini that I made for dinner. We ate ours yesterday.
It was yummy.
Yeah, it's always so good. Can I digress for just a moment
on this show?
Chicken tetrazzini. What the hell is wrong with your sister that she doesn't like that?
Well, okay. She specifically was referring to the kind that they used to serve in our high school cafeteria.
Right, which was also delicious.
There's a case to be made, sure. But I think, you know, just because you don't like the institutional version of something doesn't mean...
I mean, the one in my school cafeteria was delicious. I assume it's the same one.
Probably. This comes out of the same can, I'm sure. Yeah. But like, okay, for example, my high school cafeteria served what they called chicken and dumplings, and it was all kinds of gnarly.
Okay.
It was in this weird yellow sauce and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it was only later I discovered that chicken and dumplings is great.
Yeah, it
but,
sure
you know,
is. Yeah.
Not when made, you know, in the institutional variety, apparently.
I suppose.
So, yeah, no, we were talking to my family, though, we were saying that the tetrazzini gets a bad rap. People think of it as like this sort of like some sort of grandma recipe that's going to
involve... It is a grandma recipe.
You know, Campbell's cream of mushroom soup.
Ain't you trust your grandma to make good foods?
You know...
Mine died.
American cuisine has a checkered past.
I suppose it does, but man, chicken tetrazzini.
It's so good, though.
Chicken and turkey tetrazzini, whatever kind you want to make.
Yeah, all the tetrazzini.
So good!
Anyway, treat it like it's creamed chipped beef on toast or something.
Which can also
be really
not
good.
Not bad, yeah.
Depending on who's making it.
You know, it's chicken and vegetables in this creamy sauce, like a chicken pot pie.
Uh-huh.
Like the insides of a chicken pot pie.
Over pasta.
Oh, with pasta. And then baked. And it's got like cheese on top and breadcrumbs. And
what's not to like?
So nice. Anyway, I brought over a big chunk of it to friends.
Yes.
And as I did that, I was driving down Pico.
Mm-hmm.
Past the late, great West Side Pavilion Mall, as seen in the film Clueless,
yes,
and in Tom Petty's Free Fallin' video.
Correct.
And now, the West Side Pavilion has been closed for about a year.
Yeah. It's one of the rare cases where the mall died, but the movie theater stayed open.
The movie theater attached to the mall is still up and running. Well, I mean, not right now, but...
Yeah, in general.
The mall closed.
Yeah.
And now they're hollowing out the inside.
Oh.
The existing exoskeleton, the exterior structure, that 70s swoopy thing on top, you know, still there.
Okay.
But the mall itself is gutted. You can see through it as you drive past. It's distressing.
So it's going to be like what, condos and malls clothing?
I don't know.
Weird.
I know malls have never been cool, but I grew up with them.
They were my town square.
I love a mall.
Me too. Believe me, on my list of things to do once I feel comfortable going back out into the world again.
You want to go to Glendale Galleria?
South Coast Plaza.
You want to go to South Coast Plaza?
Yeah,
sure. Like, I only would go to South Coast Plaza if I could single-handedly excavate, like, the Dior and the big giant, what's that store that sells the gigantic coffee table books that are too big for anybody's coffee table unless you're super rich?
Not Taschen, it's
coffee table the size of a pool table.
Yeah.
Asseline.
Yes.
Get rid of them, put in a hot dog on a stick.
Look, as long as you leave...
And a Baskin Robbins. That's all I need.
As long as you leave the Hallmark store alone and the place where they put the Christmas tree that has other Christmas trees on it, those must remain untouched.
Because otherwise, all you got is the Din Tai Fung. And that's wonderful, but it's just not enough.
They have
I need a food court in a mall.
You could have a nice Laurie's sandwich.
That place is not that great.
It's okay.
It's not. No.
That other place we went was not that great.
What was it called? Claim Jumper.
Yeah, that was it. I was going to say Steakhouse Pavilion. I knew that wasn't it. That was one of those, like, everybody was grumpy going in, and then even grumpier when we left. We were all
sitting around fighting while we were eating our lunch.
Good times.
What were we talking about?
Going
to a mall.
Malls.
But what prompted that?
I have no idea.
Doesn't matter. Anyway.
It had something to do with either... Oh, West Side Pavilion.
Yeah. I drove past the West Side Pavilion. It's all hollowed out. And I'm very... It made me kind of sad.
Well, what do you do with the shell of West Side Pavilion that you then want to stuff with something else?
I don't know.
A creamy nougat.
Maybe they are going to tear down the outside of it too. Who knows? Maybe they're just hollowing out the inside first. I don't get it.
That seems like a lot of effort if you're just going to demolish the whole thing.
Maybe for the sake of the everything around it, you don't want to.
Oh, for the neighbors.
Have or... like, you know, billowing materials and dust and stuff as you're dismantling the inside of an entire shopping mall.
Heaven only knows.
Clueless.
Yes.
May West Side Pavilion rest in peace.
That's right. Pour one out for West Side Pavilion.
We watched films.
Pour out an Orange Julius for West Side Pavilion.
We watched three undemanding films this week.
A case could be made. Sure.
The best of which
is
The Trip to Greece.
Yes.
With Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan. Is this the fourth?
This is the fourth and apparently final.
Oh, really?
Of the trip series.
This is the last one.
This is the last one they keep saying.
They could keep doing this.
Oh, forever, sure.
Yeah.
You know, Coogan and Winterbottom worked together a lot.
Yes.
They just did that movie Greed.
Yeah. I think, was that a Winterbottom film?
Yes.
Neither one of us saw it.
No.
Yeah.
Although one of the cast members of that film pops up in Trip to Greece.
Yes.
Greed was also shot in Greece.
I see.
And then they went back and did this movie. So it's the fourth time around, and Brydon and Coogan are playing, quote, themselves, unquote. The sort of movie version of them and their lives that they've crafted up to this point.
They are people named Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, and they have had similar careers that are constantly talked about and referenced.
Yes.
But they have fictionalized families.
Yes.
Who appear on camera.
Like Coogan in real life, I think, has a daughter, but in the movies he has an adult son.
Yes.
And I think Brydon's kids, it's also, you know, there are aspects of their lives that they share with the people playing them and others that they don't. So this time around, they are retracing the steps of the Odyssey. And it really kind of brings home what the sort of undercurrent of the whole series has been.
Yeah.
Because on the surface, pleasures are very pleasurable. You know, Bryden and Coogan ripping on each other, doing impersonations,
Driving
like.
around, eating in really fancy restaurants.
Right. And
Yeah.
again, gorgeous food porn, like Winterbottom knows how to film chefs at work and then the
Yeah.
plating and all that stuff. So
And
that.
wasn't the original one, the first one, ostensibly Steve Coogan had been hired to write about food?
They do that in all the movies. Like
I see.
in this movie, they make a couple references to like I'm doing this piece, and you know,
Yeah.
and the joke also that Bryden like does most of the actual writing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they ever really do any of that, but I don't know for sure. These are in the UK, these are all TV series, and in the US, apart from you can watch the first The Trip as a series
As
on Amazon. You can rent it on
you
Amazon.
can stream the first series that was, it's like six episodes, I
Yeah.
think, and then cut down
To a feature
to a
film.
theatrically released feature film in the US and I guess some other countries as well.
Yes.
But the next two.
The next three were also TV series, but you cannot get them easily in the United States. If you're one of those like hardcore like Doctor Who people or whatever who has access to like those nefarious places on the internet where you can find UK television, I'm sure you got your hands on all of these, but we've only seen the feature films. Anyway, but so yeah, on the surface it is funny haha jokes and yummy food, but the undercurrent has always sort of been men aging, men losing their vitality, men no longer being at their sort of like sexual prime, you know, becoming replaceable basically, you know, and that's sort of what we've seen these characters go through, and it's no coincidence that they're almost always visiting ruins. They're rarely in like major metropolitan centers. They're almost always in catacombs or and like, you know, these. And so to be retracing the steps of the Odyssey is sort of this ultimate kind of like male menopausal epic journey that they're on, and bringing the whole series to a close.
Now, if that theme doesn't sound interesting or valuable to you, you should understand that these two guys are really, 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 really funny.
Yes.
And even if you don't care about, you know, the quality of diminishment that takes place over the course of a long male life, they will keep you laughing
Yeah.
all the same.
Yeah.
'Cause they're good friends, but they're also sort of like
Rivals.
in a bit, in a way, they're a bit. There's a bit of a rivalry there, but it's not malicious.
No.
It's the kind of, you know, ball busting
Yes.
that guys do with each other, that friendliness as an insult or
An
insults as a display of affection.
adversarial friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so that's the thing. I mean, you know, you can go as deep as you want with the sort of undercurrent of all this, but like I said, the surface pleasures are very pleasurable. Just to watch them be funny, to goof on each other, to do impersonations. No Michael Caine this time. I think they figured out
They've worked
they took
through
that to yeah, to, but you
that.
know, you get a lot of like you get Anthony Hopkins and Richard Burton and Mick Jagger, and at one point Bryden does Coogan, which is funny. So yeah, I love these movies, and you know, I've seen some people on film Twitter trying to make the case that it's the best series. And I'm like, I think the before movies are up there too. You know, there are some other ones, and you know, if you want to get historical, I'm sure, you know, I still have not actually watched the why am I blanking on this? The Satyajit Ray, the Apu trilogy,
Yes.
which is one of my big gaps as a film person.
Yes.
But yeah, I'd say this ranks among the great film series, and certainly most watchable.
So now we've had four of these.
Yeah.
Can we please have three more Tea with the Dames movies?
If they want to play versions of themselves, so much the better.
Because I've already asked for that to become a television series
Yes.
where Maggie Smith, Judi Dench, Joan Plowright, and
Eileen
Eileen
Atkins.
Atkins meet weekly for drinks.
Well, they would just have to, the thing is, like, you get to send Coogan and Bryden on the road. Like, Joan Plowright, I don't think, leaves the house.
No, they go to her house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then they all have to go to Joan Plowright's house every single week
and do
this.
Does this become like Fast and the Furious where they work in new dames? Like, does Helen Mirren ever get invited over?
I bet Helen Mirren doesn't get invited over.
What about Emma Thompson?
Emma Thompson might get invited over, but she has to be like 20 years older.
I like the idea of an expanding Tea with the Dames universe.
Who does it?
I mean, Helen Mirren did join the Fast and the Furious.
Miriam Margolyes could join them.
Is she a dame?
I don't know.
She should be.
But she ought to be. Yeah.
Don't they goof on her?
They do. They make fun of her.
Because she planned her own funeral, and how dare
she. Yeah, how dare she plan her own funeral. You could get Imelda Staunton.
Sure, yes.
She could join them.
Totally.
I don't know if she's a dame. I don't really care if they've been damed or not. I just want the same thing that these dudes are getting.
Yeah.
But in my head, nobody likes Helen Mirren. I don't know. I just think they all resent her.
She went Hollywood?
We've already discussed this on one other podcast this week. She lives in the Hollywood Hills up behind Rock and Roll Ralph's.
Yes.
And so, like...
Next door to Roland Emmerich.
We're more neighbors with Helen Mirren than any of them.
That's true. We should invite her over for tea to make up for the fact that Dame Joan is not.
But in my head...
Lady Joan, sorry.
In my head, none of them like Helen Mirren.
Your fanfic is engrossing.
I just think they all think that she... Here's what I think. I think they, as a group, they all gossip about her.
Because she's not around.
Because she's not around. Mm-hmm. And
but when they see her in public, they're just all... Oh,
look at who thinks she's a sex symbol. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's in my head, what they think about Helen Mirren. I love Helen Mirren. She's fantastic.
I bet they do too.
But I have an imagined imagined feud going on between her and every other British actress of her generation.
We may never
know. It's a fun imaginary feud that I have going
on. I hope someone is writing this up to let us all in on it. Anyway, yes, so watch The Trip to Greece. It's great. If you haven't seen the previous ones, it's still entertaining. But, you know, if you've got the time, as many folks do, traipse through all four movies. The trip to Italy, the trip to Spain, the trip to Greece, all a lot of fun. I think if I had to rank them, I think Italy's the best one. And then either this or the original trip. And then I have to put Spain last. I like it a lot, but it tries something with the ending that is different than the other movies. And it doesn't really quite work. And they seem to run away from it in this movie. Like, you would expect this movie would sort of pick up where that one left off. But instead, it's sort of like there's like two lines of dialogue to sort of slough it off. And then it's never mentioned again.
Right.
Kind of like, all right, well, I guess that was a thing we tried. And it didn't really play out the way we thought it would. I don't know. But this is only based on seeing except for the first one. I haven't seen the TV, the longer TV versions of any of these.
Shall we move on to Body Cam?
Oh, why not?
It stars Mary J. Blige.
Yes, it does.
As a cop in New Orleans, just outside of New Orleans.
In Swinton.
Some part, yeah. It is a town founded by Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
In Louisiana. Also, Tilda Swinton plays...
The whole town.
The buildings in the town.
She's so good, y'all.
I guess this is a fictionalized...
Yeah, I looked at that. There is no Swinton, Louisiana.
Okay, well, it's New Orleans. And so, anyway, there is the aftermath of a police shooting of a young, unarmed black person.
Yes. Teenager.
A teenager. And that informs the very beginning of the film.
Yes. There's like there's the it's the end of some sort of like disciplinary hearing.
Yeah.
Cops get cleared. Riots are starting to happen in the streets.
And so an officer who's out alone in his squad car comes upon a van. No plates. No
burned out taillight.
He stops the car. The person inside, and we don't know who it is because they have on a hoodie and their face is covered, won't get out. And as the officer becomes more and more agitated by the fact that this person won't get out, a supernatural force kills him.
Yes.
Okay.
Also unseen.
An unseen supernatural force impales him on a like a thing.
Yeah, fence post.
Like a fence post. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mary J. Blige returns to duty after several months, where she has been suspended for striking a civilian because she is still coping with the accidental drowning death of her son in a neighbor's pool.
Yes.
So she is being sent out. It's her first time back on patrol. She's been assigned a rookie partner played by Nat Wolff.
Yep.
Who is not Alex Wolff. I always have to check which Wolff it is. They look a lot alike. They're not twins, but they're brothers and they're close. And so over the... No, it's not over... This is over several evenings, right?
It's over the course of a few nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We, you know, she investigates the death of the cop, starts encountering other situations that are similar and inexplicable. And for some strange reason, when she watches the body cam footage or the car cam footage of what happens, it then disappears.
Yes.
And so she's the only one who's seen this thing, and she can't even explain what it is that she's seen or try and wrap her head around it because it is so clearly otherworldly or, you know.
And this happens to her a few times during the running time of the film. Like, it's a very Eyes of Laura Mars sort of thing where she sees a thing and she's the only one who sees a thing. And then when everyone else is like, well, where's the footage? She's like, it's gone. You know.
That said, I would love a Mary J. Blige cover of Prisoner.
The song.
Theme from Eyes of,
from
Laura,
Eyes
Mars.
Of Laura Mars. Yeah.
Yeah. And so ultimately, the movie is trying to be a horror film that is about Black Lives Matter, that is about police brutality, that is about the sort of collective power of a need for justice and vengeance in the community. And it doesn't really work. It's got, you see all the ideas on the bulletin board of what this movie is trying to do, but it's not making any of them happen.
The filmmaker is a guy named Malik Vital.
Yeah.
And I read a little bit about him.
Uh-huh.
And he's a fascinating dude.
Oh.
He was born in Los Angeles, but raised sort of all around the world with his mom.
Oh, okay.
Like traveled the world as a kid. And has made a couple other films.
Right.
And, which I have not seen. And what's frustrating to me about this one is that I can feel what it was supposed to be. It's got a great sense of mood and atmosphere. It's a very quiet movie. For a horror film, it refuses to do a lot of jump scares.
Yeah, there's not a lot of...
Yeah, there's none of that, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it is spooky and creepy because you do see these phantom figures that emerge from, you know, the atmosphere, but you don't know what's bringing them to the burned out houses that they inhabit,
right, or the convenience store. Or the...
Yeah, and what you learn over the course of the film is that the person in the van is Anika Nani Rose,
right?
From Dreamgirls.
Yeah. And from Justin
DeKelly. And from the film from Justin DeKelly, yes. And she plays a substantial role in the production of the Phantoms.
Yes.
Whether it's voluntary or involuntary,
right.
These...
She's a conduit.
This supernatural force is the manifestation of rage.
Yeah.
Over police brutality and the injustice that is visited upon the community.
Right.
So,
and there's a movie in that.
Yeah, there is, and it's almost here. Yeah. Like it is like I said, it has a great sort of command of moodiness. It doesn't fool around with like soundtrack to make you feel things. Mm. There's not a lot of score.
No, it's like I said, it's a very film.
Quiet film. It's almost all at night.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, a protagonist who has either been edited badly or something. I don't know what's going on with Mary J. Blige's performance. She's the reason I watched this movie because yeah. I love her. And I kept thinking, I don't get a sense of what you're grieving.
Well,
yeah. Or what your problem is and what you're feeling when you are encountering this horrifying supernatural force that only you can see.
Yeah, there's you have, I mean, her character is grieving a child who died as a purely by accident.
Yes.
And then there's this whole other story about a child who dies because of, you know, the police.
Right.
And the movie sort of equates them, but yeah. realizes that it can't, so it just sort of, it doesn't come to any conclusions. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know if this is a Studio Notes thing. I don't know if...
Not sure.
If
it's from Paramount.
It's Paramount, yeah. BET kind of collaboration. I don't know if there's, you know, if it's trying to be like this sort of character piece and sort of a procedural and a sort of, you know, issue-driven horror film.
Yes.
I don't know. It's a letdown.
I couldn't help but think about Atlantics while watching
totally.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is also a film about sort of malevolent supernatural forces that are, you know, manifested by the grief of people who have been lost.
Yeah, the ghosts of the exploited.
Yeah. And so there are some parallels
sure.
between this and that film. It's just that I was frustrated by this from start to finish because I could see where it was trying to go and then it didn't go.
And it's not even like it's sacrificing its ideas for sort of cheap scares. Cause like you say, it is thoughtfully put together. It's not, it doesn't have like jump scares or sort of dumb sort of horror stuff to kind of keep an audience engaged. It just isn't, it's not bringing its disparate elements together.
There are long stretches of not a lot happening.
Yes.
And that's strange because if that's going to be what you do, then I need that air of mystery to maintain itself. And
the momentum is gone.
Yeah. So I wished for something more than what I got.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my DVD/streaming pick of the week. Atlantics by Maddie
Diop.
I've been calling her last name Diop, but someone just told us in a letter that it's Jop.
Oh, is it?
I might not even be pronouncing that properly.
Okay.
Anyway, that is a film that was at Cannes last year, and yes. it's now streaming on Netflix.
Yes.
And it's beautiful and strange and spooky and just really, really, really great.
And then, weirdly enough, there are two streaming premieres this week from Paramount, both of which have to do with fear of the police.
Yes.
And one of them is a comedy, Lovebirds, which was supposed to premiere at South by Southwest this year. It was supposed to get a theatrical from Paramount, is now on Netflix, and it stars Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani as a couple. We first meet them sort of like the first night they've spent together, and they are clearly, neither wants it to end, and they contrive ways to sort of spend the next day together. They are clearly very into each other and falling for each other. And then we abruptly cut to 4 years later when they are like on the verge of breaking up. They're completely fed up with each other. She thinks that he doesn't take enough risks, and he thinks that she is too sort of obsessed with like social media and sort of glib, shallow stuff. On their way to a friend's dinner party, they
break up.
They break up and then immediately stumble into a crime in progress that looks like they are guilty of. And so because they are two people of color in actual New Orleans,
yes,
who think that the police are just going to, like, you know, do something.
Destroy them.
Yeah. They go on the lam, and craziness ensues over the course of an evening as they try to solve it themselves, keep themselves safe, and you know, along the way, perhaps rediscover what it is they liked about them, like each other in the first place.
Yes. Now, in terms of the premise that you said, fear of the police, that is quickly dispensed with in favor of, you know, wacky set pieces where increasingly wild encounters take place with very bad people who, yes, are out to murder each other and murder them.
But it is the explanation of why they don't just call
the police. It is the explanation of why they don't just call the police. But if you were thinking this was a film about something...
Oh, heavens no.
Past that, it's not about anything at all.
It's a romantic farce.
Yeah. And we don't get enough fun farces.
Agreed.
And we certainly don't get enough of them that are done even medium well. You know, we were talking about how this reminded us of Date Night, mm-hmm, and Game Night and, whatever else night.
And you could trace it back to something like the 39 Steps.
Yes.
You know, these sort of like couples that are thrown into dangerous situations. And not only do they sort of bumble their way to success, but they also, the situation either makes them fall in love with each other or makes them fall back in love with each other.
This is somewhere between Date Night and Game Night.
Yeah.
Game Night, I think, is
much better.
Fantastic. And Date Night is eh. And this is consistently amusing.
Yes.
Consistently fun to watch. Consistently makes you laugh.
With a great sort of star quality duo in the center of it.
Yes. He's funny and engaging. She's the same. She walks away with pretty much everything. Can we just, like, be real here
sure,
for a moment?
Yeah. Of the two of them, she's like... I mean, I like Kumail Nanjiani. I think he's funny.
We're still seeing the beginning of Issa Rae.
Oh, yeah.
But
between this and the photograph, it's like a star is born.
Movie star qualities, like, for days.
Yeah.
She's stunning. That helps. She's really funny.
Charismatic.
Yeah. Like, you want to watch her. You want to be her friend. You want to hang out with her. You want to watch her do things. Like, I don't know who found her or how she worked her way up to Insecure, because I didn't know her career before Insecure.
She had a web series whose name I can't remember now.
Okay.
That was popular, and that's what led to Insecure happening.
But she is really, like, she should be, like, 10 times more famous and well-known than she is. And I bet she gets there.
Yeah.
Because I can also sense her ambition. and I love that kind
she's,
of about her.
Is,
there's a
she's
there's that look
Roberts.
In her eyes, like, you will know me
yeah.
very soon. You'll know my name like Julia Roberts
yeah.
one of these days. Yeah.
And she has that same X factor that Julia Roberts has.
Yes.
Just the way that she knows how to hold a close-up, the way that she can just smile and, like, you know, supernova.
Who can turn the world on with her smile?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Issa Rae can. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, it's worth watching.
Totally.
Just kind of for her. But, like, it's still funny. And, again, it's not about really anything. But it's a delightful way to spend, you know, 100 minutes.
I think it benefits probably from, like, if this had been a theatrical release and we had gone to a press screening and seen it,
yeah,
like, that was all right. But as a movie to watch on Netflix, it is
with snacks.
It is totally in the zone.
So yeah, go ahead,
yeah.
Watch this one.
It's really charming.
You'll like it.
I want to talk about Military Wives real quick.
Okay.
It's from director Peter Cottoneo, who did The Full Monty, and it is very much of that school of British film that The Full Monty kind of created. The, you know, charmingly eccentric...
The Clive Owen in prison movie where he's like
green
gardener, and then
yeah.
the The calendar girls, where the ladies make the calendar.
The one with Ian Hart of the town of guys that bring in the single women looking for husbands.
I didn't see that one.
Brassed Off.
I remember Brassed Off.
Like charming British people do a thing.
You know? And it's in some sort of small to medium-sized village.
Usually, yes. Yeah. So this time it's a military base, and these are women. This is in the early 21st century. These are women whose husbands, and actually one woman whose wife.
The early 20th century?
Sorry, 21st century.
Okay,
sorry.
Yes.
Have been, it's the 90s.
So this does not take place back in the 1900s?
No. In the ooze.
Okay.
Women whose spouses have been dispatched to Afghanistan. Kristen Scott Thomas plays the wife of the colonel, and you know, pretty much there's very much a sort of hierarchy of your spouse's rank in terms of how the women are treated. Sharon Horgan's character is married to the master sergeant, who he is sort of newly elevated to that position. So she is now suddenly in a leadership role for having to kind of help upkeep the morale of the wives.
Yes.
You know, keep them busy, keep them distracted, keep them, you know, not too, you know, upset about their husbands being away or wife being away. And
Is there a lesbian couple?
There is a lesbian couple.
Okay. Got it.
So Kristen Scott Thomas sort of, you know, is very pushy about like getting Sharon Horgan to do stuff. And eventually they start this singing group. You know, and Kristen Scott Thomas wants it to be a proper choir, and Sharon Horgan is like, no, we're going to sing pop songs. And of course, you know, they're terrible until they're great, you know, and they get...
Wait, so they can't sing, but then they can sing?
Well, they're kind of roughly put together, but all one right. of them can sing really well.
Because that's kind of the magic of Sister Act.
Where which is cited in this movie.
Suddenly they can't sing. They can't sing, but then suddenly they can.
Yeah. Well, it's like they do a
and you believe it?
They have a public concert and it's terrible, and it's like it's out in the
and everybody's like, boo, military wives, you suck.
No, but there's like trucks are backing up and like all these things are making noises and distracting.
Mommy, I hate the military wives.
but then they go on a hike to the woods and they're in a tunnel and they sing Yaz, Only You.
Oh.
And suddenly it's gorgeous, okay. You know. And
yeah, it's actually Alonzo.
Yazoo,
Yazoo.
Yes, in the film they say Yazoo because they're rich.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so then they get, of course, they get picked to sing at Albert Hall, and everybody freaks out, and then they get ready for it, and will they make it in time, and you know. So this is one of those movies that you can see the strings. Like, they are manipulating mm-hmm. you hard from the get-go.
Right.
And yet, I didn't mind. Because they're doing it really well, and because I'm watching Kristen Scott Thomas and Sharon Horgan, who are wonderful, and the cast in general is funny and good. And I gotta say, you get to the end, and the movie wants you to cry, and I did. It stepmommed me.
Mm, curse you, stepmom.
I curse you, stepmom. But as unlike stepmom, I wasn't mad at it for doing it. I'm like, this is what you had in mind all along, and now I'm gonna play along. And who knows, maybe if the world were different right now, and I weren't as prone to weeping at the drop of a hat as I am right now.
Do I need to hold your hand?
I'm okay.
Right. Are you sure?
At this minute, I'm okay.
Can I help?
You know, it got me. So I got to say, kudos to you, military wives. You got me.
So what you're saying is that now that you've watched this film, you're fully on board with the imperialist war machine and the military-industrial complex.
That is the one thing in the movie that did bug me. There is a scene where they're all walking through town, and there is an activist who has a table set up, and it's like, stop the war in Afghanistan.
Right.
And Sharon Horgan's character says, we don't have that luxury. We're married to the war.
Okay.
And I'm like, I don't...
Who wrote that line of dialogue?
Because, I mean, look, I'm sure that's probably an attitude that is held by many people who are spouses in the military. I'm sure there are also other spouses in the military who feel like they can juggle supporting their loved one who is fighting and also being
and maybe
against,
be against the, wars.
The war as a whole.
Right.
And, you know, but the movie doesn't stop to unpack that. We just get that line and move on. And to me, it just feels like a cheap applause line for, like, awful right-wing people. So either don't say it at all or make it part of a larger conversation movie. But that's it. But it's just that one line that rankled. The rest of it is perfectly fine.
Where can I see this movie? Because now you've almost convinced me with the promise of Sharon Horgan and Kristen Scott.
Yeah, no, they make it worth watching. It's on Amazon and iTunes and the places.
All right. I do need to talk about the weirdness of Yaz with one Z, Yazoo, and then Yaz with two Zs.
Stand up for your love rights.
It is such an utterly confusing, not for me, but I remember, and this still continues, by the way. The band Yazoo, Vince Clarke,
yes,
and Allison Moyet, yeah, for some weird legal reason, could not be called Yazoo in the United States.
Right.
Their albums had to be released under the name Yaz with one Z.
Correct.
I don't know if there was an American Yazoo somehow that had a copyright on the name or whatever, but that happened.
I think it was the Flintstones Great Gazoo. No, I don't know.
And so that was a strange, you know, thing as they became well known in the United States, you know, among, you know, people who liked
college radio,
dance music kind of stuff, Depeche Mode fans.
Yes.
Then later in the decade, the production team Cold Cut introduced to the world the song "The Only Way Is Up,"
baby,
by Yaz with two Z's.
Yaz and the Plastic People?
Plastic Population.
Population.
Yeah. And so she was, her name was like Yasmin or something, and so like that was her, the stage name of what she would be. And so that song became popular in the United States, and people were like, wait, is this the same one? And now there's another Z? And not 2 weeks ago, someone said to me, oh, I love Yaz. And I'm like, because I referenced The Only Way Is Up.
Uh-huh.
And someone said, oh, I love Yaz. And I thought, which one are you talking about?
Just so we're clear
Why 35 years of music, pop music history, are we still having this confusing conversation?
Don't even start me on the London Suede.
And the Charlatans UK, the English Beat, who were supposed to perform a couple nights ago with the Greek.
Oh, right.
Along with Madness and Mighty Mighty Boston. Mm. Their name is The Beat.
Right.
But for some bizarre reason,
there was already a The Beat.
There was already The Beat here, so they had to be known as the English Beat.
Yeah.
And again, they became popular in the United States, and all hell breaks loose when that happens. Like, it's better if you just have, you know, your fame in one country.
I think that's one of the benefits of having the internet now, is that when you name your band, you can be like, okay, is there another?
Right.
Is there another Gravy Boat?
Right, exactly.
Okay, good. We can be Gravy Boat.
You were searching for a podcast name with Daniel from Deck the Hallmark.
Right.
You guys were trying to figure out what the name of your new co-hosted podcast was going to be.
Yeah.
And so you sat there with me one afternoon and you're like, what about this name? Does any other entity have this name?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that no one had that luxury back in the day.
No. You had to do a LexisNexis search. And only lawyers could do that.
You had to go to your local university library to find out the answer.
We should talk about Out.
We should. It's very short.
It's a short film from Pixar that is now streaming on Disney Plus, part of a series called Spark Shorts, which I hear they're all good. I need to go take a look.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's basically...
Why is this a special group of shorts?
It is basically an opportunity...
Are they all about homosexuality?
They are not all about homosexuality. They are all... but they are all apparently reflective of sort of different communities that are not often... featured in animated
features. Oh, so
they've
put all the diversity cartoons in one bunch.
Well, they're diversity cartoons, but they're also people at Pixar who've never directed before getting their break.
All right.
So it is. So it's like new faces of 1954.
All right.
And this is the, it's either the Eartha Kitt or the Paul Lynde.
I can accept look that. At it.
Sure. Yeah, so Out is part of this Spark short series. And it is a lovely short about a guy and his boyfriend, and they're the guy is moving. He is not out to his parents. His parents surprise him by showing up to help him move. A cosmic dog and cat pull a switcheroo and put the dog in the guy's body and the guy in the dog's body.
This is a cosmic and also queer dog and cat.
Yes, so they ride down. They come out of a rainbow.
They come down from space on a rainbow.
Yes,
yeah, and they're sparkly purple and pink colors. And,
yes,
which is the color. Those are the two colors of homosexuality.
Absolutely, it's official. So anyway, so while the guy is in his own dog's body, he hears his mom say things that she's never been able to say to him before, and he realizes, you know, what his relationship with his parents is, could be, should be, and it's very lovely. When they were sort of hyping it a couple days in advance, like, oh, it's going to be, you know, Disney's first gay protagonist. And I was like, well, I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when I saw the trailer, I was like, okay, well, that's nice. But is this going to feel very sort of like 1991, you know, kind of coming out story? But no, I think it is. It's
like a 1998 coming out story.
Oh, stop. It's very sweet.
It is very sweet.
This is a thing that people are still doing. You know, it is part of the coming of age process. Yes. Are there more like openly gay seventh graders than ever before? Absolutely. But yes. Like, are there still people who get to adulthood and haven't had that conversation with
Correct.
Their parents? Yes, there are.
Yes.
It's very lovely. I want to see what else this filmmaker does.
About 10 minutes long. Maybe
yeah,
not even
yeah,
that
like
long.
Yeah, like 9, 10 minutes. And
it's very sweet. The animation is lovely. It's not the sort of typical digital stuff that you're used to.
Yeah, the character design is fun.
And it's, you know, it gets family dynamics right.
Yes.
And it's very sweet. It's not breaking ground unless you consider that it is a, you know, Disney product.
And that it's on Disney Plus.
And that it is on Disney Plus as well.
I'm sure some corner of the internet somewhere is firing up their old fax machine.
The dozen moms are
exactly
upset.
Like, my children might see this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Stephen Hunter is the director's name. It is his first directorial effort, and I hope I hope he gets to do more stuff. This is a lovely premiere or debut from him. You mentioned that your streaming pick is Atlantics.
Yes.
I had one in mind and it just flew out of my head. What was I thinking about? A movie that I quite liked last year that did not have a big footprint. I think a lot of people missed it. Is Stacey Passon's We Have Always Lived in the Castle, based on the novel by Shirley Jackson.
Yeah.
Given that Haunting of Hill House was really big on Netflix, and we're about to get Shirley, the movie about Shirley Jackson, starring Elizabeth Moss, which I'm very excited to see. Might be a good time for folks to go catch up with this one. It stars Tysa Farmiga and Alexander Daddario as two sisters with secrets living in a gloomy house. And Sebastian Stan is in it, and Crispin Glover, and I liked it quite a bit. And Stacey Passon directed one of my favorite LGBT films of the last 25 years or so, a movie called Concussion, not the Will Smith one, the other one. Anyway, We Have Always Lived in the Castle is streaming for free with ads on Tubi, T-U-B-I, so if you have not seen it, and I suspect...
Oh, it's free on Tubi.
Yeah,
oh,
this is cool. Like most people have not seen it.
Nice.
Check it out. We have some letters.
We do. Here is one of them. Where are my glasses?
That would help.
James. When it comes to Hardy's performance or his concept of the character in Capone, Josh Trank, did say in an interview that he, quote, prepared himself beforehand that Tom would probably want one of the soilings removed. But what I learned is that Tom Hardy cannot soil his pants enough on screen.
That scans.
On a side note, I recall it was a flippant tweet about the cut of Fantastic Four that landed Mr. Trank in movie jail. And I think one of the consequences, post-Me Too, is letting some, admittedly mostly white male, filmmakers back into the fold who were canceled for that level of insubordination, while other people working for the same studios were getting away with much worse behavior without any resistance until it became inconvenient. That said, I dig Capone's weirdness, and I am glad to see Trank back. Yeah, Capone is weird.
Yeah, definitely.
And it is, for me, worth looking at because of that weirdness.
In the wake of the whole Snyder Cut thing that's happening, Richard Brody said he would very much like to see what Trank's original version of Fantastic Four was like before all the like reshoots and studio tinkering. I don't know that I'm dying to, but I suspect there'd be something interesting there.
Greg says, it was nice to hear someone remembering Anderson Jones.
Mm.
I didn't know him well enough that we were ever at each other's homes, but whenever Andy saw me across a crowded lobby or festival, he would yell my name and run over and hug me unapologetically. I didn't have many or any non-work friends during my L.A. years, so I think about Andy's seemingly unconditional friendship and camaraderie frequently. The news of his death sort of left me distraught, and also without anyone to share my grief. I left L.A. because of a health crisis, which also meant I had to drop out of John Ridley's AMC show and would have been working with Andy. Oh, I didn't know about that. We were the same age, but I'm almost 50 now. Andy Jones will always be a youthful 38. P.S. I would have agreed with Anderson Jones about Kool-Aid, but I also have type 1 diabetes, so yeah, good point.
Well, thank you, Greg. You know, you probably know about this, but Nathan Rabin's memoir, The Big Rewind, he talks quite a bit about working with Andy on John Ridley's AMC show. So you might, if you haven't already read that, you might find it of interest.
Here's another great moment with Anderson Jones, and I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating.
Sure.
We were at the press screening together for Glitter.
Go on.
And there is the moment in Glitter when young Miss Glitter transitions from childhood to adulthood.
Yes.
And they do this by popping you right down into a nightclub in 1983 or 4 with Mariah dancing to a club track at the time that was very popular by a band called Lyme. Called Oh Babe, we're gonna love tonight. And there's also Blondie's Heart of Glass is in there as well.
Yes.
They get a fuse together, and that's in my memory. But the minute you see Mariah like dancing in this club
with Tia Tejada and DeBrat,
I don't want to yell into the microphone, but Andy Jones throws both hands into the air in the press screening and goes, "Woo!"
I bet you no one shushed him because it was Glitter.
No one did shush him.
People
did turn around. I just started laughing my head off. And that was a good memory of Andy Jones.
Yes.
Then there was the time he made me drive him all around town. Do you remember that day?
No.
We were, again, at another press screening. Mm. And when we left, he goes, "I need a ride." Now, Andy never asked you in advance for a ride. He would just say, "I need a ride." Like, "Driver, please take me to this..." Sorry, there's no please either. And I just said, like, "You just need to go home." And he lied to me.
Oh.
And he said, "Yes. Can we stop at blah, blah, blah along the way?" We made like 3 or 4 stops in neighborhoods that bore no resemblance to mine or his, far-flung locations. I also now need you to go here and here and here. And by the third one, I said, "Where next, Miss Simone?"
Did your head turn into a giant lollipop with a sucker label?
He said, "Did you just call me Nina Simone?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I love it." And I was like, "I don't love it. I'm never driving you anywhere again."
If y'all have not read or listened to the audiobook of Dave's memoir, Exile in Guyville, Anderson Jones pops up as a spiritual Andy.
Spiritual Andy, yeah. She was a mess.
Mm. Miss Jones.
Miss Jones, yes. Thomas says, Hi, David Alonzo. This is Thomas, the same Thomas, who leaves comments on Patreon from time to time. I've been swithering about sending you an email like this for a while, but on the latest LK, you read a letter from another guy with a podcast and seemed interested in his work, so I figured, what's the harm? I've been running a wee podcast of my own since August of 2019, and I guess I just wondered if you had any tips for growing or developing an audience. I think you guys have a really magical thing going with the LK podcasts, particularly because you managed to keep people very engaged, myself included. I guess I was just wondering how you got to that point. I found that my downloads haven't grown an awful lot since I started the show, despite the fact that I'm trying to promote it in various ways. Obviously, I'm not expecting to end up with the same kind of audience as you guys overnight or at all, but I just thought it would be cool to get some tips from folks I admire the work of. Any insight you have into how to grow a podcast and create a strong community would be great. My podcast is here, by the way, in case you're interested. What's it called? He doesn't tell us the name.
Can you tell us the URL? Link.
There's a link, but you can't tell from the URL. Hope this doesn't come off like a shameless plug. I'm trying to get better about sharing it without feeling self-conscious, and I figure it's relevant to what I'm emailing about.
How dare you?
Thanks for the... Hang on. I'm clicking through.
Okay.
The name of the podcast is Under 1000.
Okay.
Hosted by Thomas Flower, each episode of Under 1000 contains a brand new short story never heard anywhere else before.
Hmm.
All of the stories are 1,000 words or less.
Oh.
Well, that's a good idea.
That's a cool gimmick.
That's a very cool idea for a podcast. Under and the number 1,000. There have been 79 episodes of Under 1,000. Thomas, first of all, our audience is medium-sized. We are not on a network. We've been doing this for almost 10 years, and we have never been on a network because we had the dumb idea of making a film review podcast. A film review podcast is as common as like a fingernail. And as such, the competition is staggering. Most, you will notice, film review podcasts, unless they are attached to a bigger entity like the Criterion podcast, the Criterion Collection podcast, rely on comedians.
True. Yeah.
Comedy writers and comedians. And so that's fine, but if you are going to do, you know, a podcast on a subject that lots of people are doing podcasts about, you could expect your audience to grow ever so slowly and ever so incrementally. We watched our numbers go from 36 on the first episode to 36. And then a few months later, 36. And I mean it. Like, yeah, I'm not exaggerating. We grew so slowly. Now, it helped that we both had professional
gigs.
Yeah, jobs where, you know, you were writing for The Wrap and I was writing for movies.com, and we could say Dave White, you know, writes for is this the film critic for us and is the co-host of the Linoleum Knife podcast. You know, it just so happened that I used to write for the LA Weekly, and my editor at the LA Weekly started a literary magazine, and I wrote a story for her magazine, and there was a launch party, and someone from KCRW was there, and he heard me read, and I got on his storytelling show, and that led to us eventually sort of becoming known there, and now we're on the National Public Radio here in Los Angeles talking about movies once a month. So, like, little things that happen to you that you wind up in that don't necessarily have anything to do with your podcast.
Yeah.
Everything can kind of flow back into that. If you are out in the world doing things, if you are guesting on other people's podcasts,
absolutely.
If other people, if you have other podcast hosts guesting on your show, if it is the kind of show that needs guests.
Right.
You know, if you are Karina Longworth and you're doing You Must Remember This, she doesn't have guests.
Yeah.
She creates her own like stories and records them and writes them, and it's a whole production.
Yeah.
Right. So it really does depend on your subject matter. It depends on, you know, your circle of contacts,
and
you know, where you have to be able to promote the thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
No, I was going to say, it basically just is the question of sort of networking with the kind of people that you want to hear your show, the people that you think would be most interested in your show.
I would never call it networking.
Well,
Alonzo is more careerist than I am.
I mean, I'm not. Okay, let me put it this way. I don't go on other people's podcasts strictly to get people to listen to this podcast.
Correct.
I do it because it's fun. I do it because I'm friends with the host. I do it because we're talking about Christmas movies or some other topic that I'm interested in.
Right.
And then if it turns out that the net benefit of that is that I'm also maybe finding somebody who didn't know Linoleum Night existed and getting them to come back to the show, great. But yeah, people followed Dave from movies.com. They followed me from The Rapper. They followed me from What the Flick. Both of us were going on Pop Rocket with some frequency when that was a show.
Right.
And that led people our way. So, you know, things feed into other things. I think people maybe have followed us from here to to other shows that I host.
We wound up guesting on the Stephanie Miller show one day.
Yes.
And I was shocked by the number of people who started listening to us after that.
Absolutely.
And that show had nothing to do with movies. It's a politics.
Yeah.
It's a political show. And so, like, everything adds up over time. And by what I mean over time, I mean 10
years.
That's the thing here. Time. Be consistent. Stick with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't be afraid to let people know what you're doing.
Yeah, have it.
I'm less... Listen, Thomas, you and I are like each other. We are the same. I don't like to assume that I'm allowed to promote, self-promote, talk about it. Like, I think people don't want to hear about it. Everybody's got a podcast. Who cares? You know what I mean? I feel like that in my head. Alonzo is the opposite of me. Alonzo's the guy who... You know, when we're brainstorming this or that, he's got 7 ideas to promote us. And I'm like, 3 of those ideas are very embarrassing to me, so we're not going to do it. And then the other 4, figure it out, I guess, if you want. But don't expect me to lend a hand.
And you know, so I think
he's out here, you know, with his ambition. And I'm, you know,
I think it's helpful to
hiding.
To try and have some kind of presence on social media. And you're not just going to be shooting out, you know, the link to your show. You're going to have other stuff that's of interest, and then, you know, throw in there every so often, oh, by the way, new episode. Yeah, I mean, if anything, it drives me crazy that I can't get Dave to, like, just post the link on Twitter every week.
Oh, I retweet your tweet about it every week on Twitter.
Okay.
It's Facebook that I have a hard time remembering to do, because I'm not
on Facebook that much.
Really, unless it's to talk to old friends who've always been on Facebook.
Right. But yeah, like, so, you know, I'd say try and build up a Twitter presence in which you talk about the things that your show is about, whether it's, you know, you're sharing news from the world of fiction, you know, or, you know, if there's, I don't know, contests for short story writers, that kind of thing, like become a thing that people are interested in following you for that. And then in the meet every so often, you're like, oh, hey, by the way, go listen to my show, you know, and I think no one, if anybody drops you because they think you're promoting yourself, well, like that's their problem. But I think you'd be surprised how many people, if you're having conversations about the thing that people that are interested in your show want to know about, and then in addition, you've mentioned periodically that you have this show and, hey, go listen to it. You know, that's a good way to get people interested.
I don't want to ignore the fact that you and I have been writing about film for 20 years.
30.
Well, you've been doing it longer, but I've been doing it for now, well, 21 years now.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it for even longer, for 30 years. We're old, right? So that matters.
Yeah,
being older and have had this a long time doing this thing.
We're published authors.
We're published. We both have written books that have been published. We, you know, that got our name out. So it's like that amount of backup material that we had coming into this as journalists and authors. Also, our location helps us a lot because, you know, we are in Los Angeles.
Yes.
So not only are we near lots of other people who are doing podcasts, but we are near people who could be guests, not just other podcast hosts. So, like, you know, we do a film podcast. Well, we just so happen to know one of the stars of The Craft. So Rachel was on our show.
Yes.
You know, we just so happened to know somebody who was a cast member of Gilmore Girls. So yeah. Rose was on our show.
We happen to know one of the main film critics at the New York Times. So Manola comes on.
Yeah. So like, when I say we happen to know these folks, it's because we've lived here 20 years and we've met them and become friends with them. And that is a natural thing that has happened. And so that becomes a place where we're like, well, let's have this person on our podcast because people know who they are and they like them and we like them. And so it'll be an easy conversation. It won't be like an interview.
Right.
We've had a few guests who were cold call interviews. And only once did I think that went well.
Hmm.
And so like the other times where you just got a hold of somebody out of the blue and said, hey, would you like to be a guest on our podcast? And the person said, yeah, sure, I guess. Why not? Whatever. Who cares? Well, that energy translated into the show.
Yeah.
And so one time it worked because Mr. McElroy is naturally magnetic and fun.
And a podcaster by trade.
Yeah. And that was that.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, otherwise, you know, if you live in a small town, you live in a place that's, you know, not close to a media center, that can be harder to, it can be harder to launch your thing. Sure.
Although right now everything is happening virtually. So, you know, you can Zoom with anybody you want.
You could, yeah. You could cold call anybody if you want to get them to say yes and be on Zoom with you.
Yeah.
Why not? So I don't know if that's good advice, if we've offered you any advice at all, but we've grown from nothing to a medium-sized potato.
Yes.
And I'm content with that because we control everything we do. We don't have a network telling us what to do. We don't have a network who can cancel us and take our show off the air.
Which was the whole point of starting this thing in the first
place. Yeah, you were on two cable TV movie review shows that both got canceled, and you came home one day and you said, I want to be a part of something that no one can cancel out from under me.
Yes.
I want to be something, I want to do something that I control. Will you please do a podcast with me? And I was like, no.
And here we are 10 years
ago. So yeah, I mean, I've always thought of us as a small, halfway decent thing.
Yeah.
And I'm content to be that way.
No, I'm happy with the size we are. We may not attract like advertisers with, you know, great frequency, but we have a very dedicated audience, a very dedicated Patreon base, and you know, it's fun. It's working out.
It's fun to enjoy.
It's fun to enjoy. We have 5-star reviews to read. It's very exciting.
Here they are.
Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on the show, like these two.
Tina KP says, these guys are so great. You get soothing, grumbly voices, lots of delicious food talk, snarky yet incisive movie talk, disagreement with affection and respect, and so much more. They're my first choice when I need something calming but distracting, always entertaining. Love them.
Oh, thank you, Tina.
Dugan says, Dennis Dugan.
Is it?
The director of I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
And co-star of Norman, Is That You?
And also Grown Ups 2 and Grown Ups 1 and and Don't Mess with the Zohan and the...
And Brain Donors?
Yeah. That? Are you that, Dugan?
It's my favorite Whitney Houston song.
David Alonso are critics. They're also husbands. Together they review cinema. They also give their listeners a peek into their lives. Enjoy an episode with your fave beverage. Your fave beverage and movie snack.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dugan, whichever Dugan you are.
Listen, I'm sorry that we, like, trash talk every film you've ever made.
I'm sure you
I mean, I'm not that sorry because you make terrible movies. Yeah, no, but if you are that Dugan, we're sure you're very nice.
Indeed. Thanks for listening in any event. Thank you for listening. Check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife. We offer up lots of goodies from extra content to exclusive programming to, you know, t-shirts and mugs and Christmas ornaments and other cool stuff like that. So yeah, I think you'll like it. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
You might like it.
You might. You might. check out our friends on the internet. Go listen to what Bibbs and Whitney are up to at the Critically Acclaimed Network, and check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, and Secretly Timid. You can, again, subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts, and we will read those five-star reviews on the air, so keep them coming, please. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Spotify and Stitcher Radio and Google Play and CastBox and Podbean. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. We hope you're all having a good week. We'll be back soon with more. Until then...
Goodbye.